might as well keep going. So agenda paper 8.
Their request to be kind.
I don't have to be nice to
you. So let's move on to agenda paper 8 on acquisition of an interest in an associate or joint venture from an entity under common control. The submission considers whether an entity could apply by analogy the scope exemption for business combinations under common control in IFRS 3 to the acquisition of an interest in an associate or joint venture from an entity under common control. The committee discussed this matter at its meetings in 2013. At that time, the committee decided that it would be better to consider it within the context of broader projects on business combinations under common control and the equity method of accounting. Since then, however, the board decided that the scope of the BCUCC project will focus on business combinations under common control and the group restructuring, excluded from IFRS 3. And that the project will not address this matter. It is also unlikely that the matter will be part of its equity method project. In the light of this, at its meeting in March 2017, the committee decided to reconsider how an entity accounts for an acquisition of an interest in associate or joint venture from an entity under common control. The submitter outlined two views on the matter. Proponents of view A note that IAS 28 does not include a scope exemption for the acquisition of an interest in an associate or joint venture from an entity under common control. Accordingly, an entity applies IAS 28. If it uses the equity method to account for its interest, the entity recognizes acquired interest at cost, and then if there is a difference, then it adjusts that initial cost measurement to the fair value of identifiable assets and liabilities as required by paragraph 32 of IAS 28. Proponents of view B say that because IFRS 3 provides a scope exemption for the acquisition of subsidiaries under common control, and the concept underlying the procedures used in accounting for the acquisition of subsidiary are also adopted in accounting for the acquisition of an investment in associate or a joint venture, as per paragraph 26 of IAS 28, an entity can apply by analogy the exemption in paragraph 2C of IFRS 3. Our analysis is outlined in paragraphs 12 to 39 of the agenda paper. Our view is that an entity applies the requirements in IAS 28 when it acquires an interest in associate or joint venture under common control from an entity under common control. It does not apply by analogy the BCUCC scope exemption. And the paper also addressed a number of scenarios that were mentioned by the committee members in 2013 as areas of concern. I would like to pause here and direct your attention to question 1 on page 12 of the paper and ask if you agree with our analysis and conclusion in paragraph 26.
So the focus is here on what the requirements and the standards say as opposed to what we might wish they said.
Yes.
Just set the rules of engagement.
So I think just generally when we have transactions under common control, we generally apply the standards to those types of transactions unless they're specifically scoped out. Now, there may be some, because it's under common control, there may be something else going on. We may need to adjust, but we still apply those standards. So my thought process here was IAS 28 is directly on point. I don't think you can apply the scope out in IFRS 3 by analogy, so I agree with the staff's analysis.
Me too. I think that we don't typically apply scope exclusions by analogy. I think they are specific to the standard in which they sit. As Bob says, if it's a transaction between entities under common control, there may be something else going on. There may be some additional disclosures in accordance with IAS 24, but there is nothing in IAS 28, which is the relevant standard, to suggest that these should be outside the scope, and so therefore I agree with the staff's conclusion.
Okay, thank you. Bertrand.
True or so, I agree with that. There is nothing currently in IAS 28 on this. At the same time, just it will be.
At least you're being clear when you're outside the boundaries.
I'm a little concerned by this answer. You have an exemption in IFRS 3 whereby you control the entity, and you don't have any exemption in IS 28 whereby you don't control the entity. And it's absolutely important to understand that you do not control. So you are less eligible to obtain information than when you control. So I think the outcome quite odd to ask you to perform more work when you don't control than when you control. But not so yet.
Yang-Soo.
I just want to say I agree with most of the staff analysis and conclusion, especially applying IAS 28 on this issue. But I have a couple of things I want to say. The first one is about some of the clarification of paragraph 23 and the last sentence of the agenda decision of second paragraph. On these two parts, paragraph 23 and the last sentence of the agenda decision, the staff is saying something about the difference between the acquisition cost and the fair value. It sounds like that all the difference between the cost and the fair value should be accounted for as a capital contribution. And I think that is not the intention of the staff. So that I want the staff to specify more clearly that that is not the intention of yours. That's my first point. The second point I want to say is that, you know, when I follow the logic for this difference between the fair value and the acquisition cost, I still have something that I'm not really comfortable with. You know, when you first say that we have to apply IAS 28 for this issue, at that time, what you're saying, what you're implying, I think, is that we should not think about the entities are under the common control. So when you apply IAS 28, you didn't think about UCC. But when you suddenly think about the difference between the fair value and the acquisition cost, you apply the concept of UCC. It could be a transaction between the owners of the companies. So that is it's kind of things that, you know, really makes me uncomfortable when we apply the concept of UCC and when we do not apply the concept of UCC not. So you know, when we apply it, when we do not apply it, so that is kind of something that confuses me.
So maybe I'll try and then come in. So I think the first point you raised, Yang-Soo, and I'm glad you raised it. You give us the opportunity to make sure we were clear and sort of at least what we were trying to say in the paper. So first of all, I think that in terms of all we were saying was is that if you acquire an interest in an associate, we think you just apply IAS 28, regardless of who you actually buy that from, whether that's an entity under, you know, that's also under common control with you or not. So you simply apply IAS 28 as you would any other acquisition. All we were then saying is when you go about applying IAS 28 in the situation, is that in working out how to apply the words in IAS 28 and working out what, you know, measuring that acquisition at cost and how you do it, we were intending to just say that then you can't ignore the fact that you bought it from an entity under common control, in a sense, just in terms of working out exactly what do I think cost is and what I've paid. Now, our intention was absolutely not to say, by the way, in every situation where you acquire an associate from an entity under common control, there absolutely would be a capital contribution or capital distribution, or you always have to search endlessly. We just felt it was a consideration that you might go through in working out costs. So I understand your question. Our intention was to say you treat this exactly the same no matter whether you buy it from somebody under common control, but we just said that when you're then applying IAS 28, there might be some other things to think about. But it could be that reference, you know, the reference we make to sort of the capital contribution, capital distribution piece in the GEM decision may be confusing, and we may want to do something with it, in a sense.
I guess I'll be the, as we say in North America, the Lone Ranger. So I think the staff outreach in the previous time it was discussed by the committee as well demonstrates that there is a fair bit of diversity in practice. Understand the staff analysis and understand why the staff concluded the way it did. But having said that, this transaction, it's under common control, it's a common control transaction. We've got the project that the board has underway. I understand that it's currently not in the scope of that project, but that project itself will likely enunciate some principles might be helpful in this particular circumstance. So it's a common control transaction, as we talked about. It's equity accounted investee, and it's a related party transaction. And the discussion we just had with the matter that Jung Soo just raised, I think raises the issue in my mind. On what basis, when you have a common control transaction and you shuffle an entity around, should you reflect a step up in the basis of that entity? And I think the whole issue gets confused if we're saying that in some circumstances you need to think about, is there a capital contribution or capital distribution? Well, I would argue that in any instance where you have a difference between the cost paid and the fair value of the underlying net assets, you would arguably have a capital contribution or distribution by the other party in the group. And so, having said all of that, I would disagree with coming to an agenda decision that this is the only way to look at the requirements, existing requirements. I would prefer to wait to see where those other projects unfold before coming out with an agenda decision along these lines.
That could be quite a while though. Just to be strict again, which words in the standard are getting you maybe to a different outcome, or are you saying you think it would be a bit better accounting, or are there particular words that are leading in another direction from the staff analysis?
So I think this, IAS 28 says account for the acquisition or account for the item of cost. Having said that, there is conflicting guidance that deals with distributions and contributions by owners. So I guess although I understand the staff's perspective that you shouldn't apply the guidance, the exception in IFRS 3 by analogy, there is a view to say that because it is a related party transaction, the only the relevant it's not in substance all that different from a business combination under common control. I mean, we apply similar procedures on the acquisition, initial acquisition of an investment in an associate. We do a purchase price allocation, et cetera. And so, as I say, I don't think it's as clear as this, the paper would suggest it is.
I thought I was going to be a lone ranger, but there you are. I can see how the staff have reached the conclusion, which is in the paper, and I can understand the technical rationale for it. However, like Reinhard, I'm not sure it is absolutely the only conclusion that you can reach. There's then the question of, well, where do you see it in the words then? So
that's my question.
I thought I'd ask myself the question before you did. So I would go to paragraph 20. Yeah, I'd go to paragraph 26. And I think this is how someone would probably argue it if they came and asked me about it. Because it says that the concepts underlying the procedures used in the accounting for the acquisition of a subsidiary are also adopted in accounting for the acquisition of an investment in an associate or a joint venture. So if you have the acquisition of a subsidiary involving entities under common control, then there are various different ways you can do it. So why, given the requirements in paragraph 26, would you not say that for the acquisition of an associate or a joint venture involving entities under common control, similarly, you're applying the same kind of concepts as you would apply to the acquisition of a subsidiary in that kind of transaction? So it's just that I would say I'm not sure it's absolutely as clear-cut as has been suggested in the paper. The technical analysis in the paper is very good, and I can follow that through. However, I can see that if I gave that view, I could also be challenged on it. The other thing to mention, just on the question of capital contributions, we have, or I can think of, one or two examples in the past on certain types of structured transactions where if we had not imputed a capital contribution, then the financial statements would have been misleading. And so I think that it is something which potentially you do need to do, not in all cases, but in some where you've got multiple linked transactions that are all going into one overall large reorganization, you can find that you need to do it. Otherwise, there's something deeply wrong with the financial statements.
Bruce.
Thanks, Sue. I kind of thought we had consensus, and then Phil, I need to weigh in now. I'm actually strongly in Bob's camp on this. I would be very concerned when we start applying, and by analogy, a scopic solution. I mean, I'm thinking, do we now turn around and what does that do to intercompany leases when I'm buying and selling assets? You know, I just get concerned, and I think that just because this happens to be something that sounds a little bit like a business combination, we feel that we can pull it in there and we can throw a nice throw in the under the common control exemption. I think that, and to stay within the scope of what you're saying, is it the answer we want in terms of the standard? Probably not. Do I think we're going to be able to come up with a solution? Almost certainly not in the short term. But I think the reality is, at the moment, that's what IAS 28 says. And I guess where I went down the path of saying to myself, well, if I don't like the answer that IAS 28 gives me, I need to come up with a better one. And I guess my suggestion would be, obviously, we need to at least see what happens with the IFRS 3 project before we can begin to answer that question. So I believe that's the answer we should take, it's IAS 28.
Yeah, I was actually going to say the same thing that Bruce just did. The concern that I have, if we think that this is that accounting for this without considering the fact that it's between related parties, is where does that stop? Do you do the same thing when intangible assets change hands, or PP&E, or push it to its extreme, transfer pricing mechanisms that move inventory around the group? It just seems to me, if the standard says cost and there isn't a scope exclusion, then cost is the accounting you do. If it's between parties under common control, I agree that you may have to pause and wonder if there's something else. But to me, the starting point will be that the standard says cost, and so I would start with cost. I just worry about where it ends if we sort of impute a scope exclusion that doesn't exist.
I appreciate Bruce and Anthony's comments, but at the same time, those are not equity method investments, as Andrew commented, are not just regular assets. And if you read paragraph 26 of IAS 28, it states the first sentence, many of the procedures that are appropriate for the application of the equity method are similar to the consolidation procedures described in IFRS 10. So this paragraph acknowledges the fact that effectively you have something quite mixed between a financial asset and something that needs consolidation procedures. So I wouldn't say, I understand that there is no specific scope exclusion within IAS 28, that at the same time, if you have a scope exclusion on something you really consolidate, applying similar consolidation procedures, what should the answer be different? And above all, it's a matter of, if I can give another example, you have an exemption in IAS 28 to equity accounts for when you have to equity account for investment funds. So you don't need to equity account for the investments or for the financial assets in which the investment fund has invested. But you don't have the similar requirements in IFRS 10, so when you consolidate the investment funds. This I can understand, because in that direction I can understand, because you would be in a position to obtain more information if you control than if you just have an influence on the entity you have to, or you should be in a position to equity account for. Where I'm troubled with the agenda decision and with the direction in the agenda decision, it's that you would be required to do more work to obtain more information for something you don't control versus an entity you control. So it's really quite embarrassing, and I do recognize that Andrew's comments is a fair one. Paragraph 26 effectively acknowledged the fact, yet that you apply consolidation procedures.
I think that for us what was important is that we viewed that as being about procedures sitting in a procedure section. I suppose I viewed that as being very different to a scope exclusion. Mm-hmm. That was thought, you know, that at the time the board thought about quite specifically about, you know, excluding something.
I understand that. That's why I initially commented saying I agree with technically with the analysis within the staff paper, there is no specific scope exclusion. But it just, I was reacting to Bruce and Tony's comments. It's not just that we are applying something by analogy to another standard. It's just that we are applying something that could relate to be like consolidation procedures to something that is not under a regular consolidation standard. Just what I'm saying, it was just reacting to notably Bruce's comments. It's not just by analogy. There's a reason behind it.
John, I haven't seen your hand up, but do you want to say anything?
I mean, when we discussed this issue back in 2013, I think we acknowledged that there was diversity in practice, and some people were reading that IAS 28 applied because it seems to, that's, you know, if you read the literature in straight lines, I think that's where you end up, that IAS 28 applies to the acquisition of any associate, irrespective of who that's acquired from. Those entities that were using the common control exemption were reading, as people have highlighted, were reading paragraph 26, and the fact that it refers both to consolidation procedures but also the concepts underlying the procedures used in accounting for acquisitions of subsidiaries, and therefore saying, well, in this situation I would, in acquiring a subsidiary, I'd be looking to IFRS 3 business combination. And it, you know, it tells me business combinations under common control are exempt. So I think at the time we also had concerns, not just with the conflict of the literature. I think the committee at the time felt that the better reading was the IAS 28, but there were also some concerns about whether IAS 28 gave you the best answer in a situation where you had common control acquisitions of associates. I suppose my view on this is, I mean, I probably would come down on the side of IAS 28 being the appropriate standard, but I am concerned by the fact that people have relied on an interpretation of paragraph 26 that doesn't seem to be completely off the planet. And I think that retrospective application, now to go back and retrospectively apply IAS 28, if they've previously applied common control accounting to those acquisitions, is going to be a fairly significant issue. So, you know, while I don't like sort of the deciding that the way we should go on an issue should be driven by the transition issues, I do think there's benefit in considering whether some type of amendment to the standard or clarification should be provided to make it clear that IAS 28 applies to all of these acquisitions, and paragraph 26 isn't sort of implying that you somehow apply IFRS 3 to acquisitions of associates under common control. So I'm a bit torn. I suppose I'm a bit torn as to whether, I mean, if you ask me technically what I think the appropriate, the literature is really saying, I think it's saying apply IAS 28. And that's the more obvious reading of the literature.
Okay, thank you. Mary had her card up, but she's put her card down.
Taken care of by somebody else.
Okay, so Bertrand, are you coming in again?
Yeah, just commenting on John's last comment. Why not amend IS 28 in adding a scope exemption or a scope exclusion?
So
it would be the opposite way of John. Obviously, I totally become that. But I would like effectively to that we add a scope exclusion for in IS 28. So similarly to what is currently applying for consolidating entities under common control. So the same for associates. Why not
to remove the scope exemption in? Three. You mean it's
No.
So you do the consequence of that, Bertrand, is to say there's no guidance there and you can all just do what you like.
Sorry?
So the consequence of that is to create even more possibilities in terms of how you account for these transactions?
Why are you saying that?
No, I'm just asking. I mean, I think I understand. I think your logic would be is because there's a scope exclusion for business combinations and that's, you know, there's similarities in these transactions that should be there. All I'm saying is the consequence of that is that then we say there are no requirements that apply to that transaction and therefore everybody can do whatever they like. So I think the outcome of that would be...
Then guidance. Yeah. Like there is guidance in... For consolidating entities.
No. Yeah, but all I'm saying is inserting a scope exclusion would say there's no requirements in IFRS literature for that transaction, therefore, so people do whatever they want.
No, or adding a requirement similar to what currently exists for consolidating entities.
But then you'd have to amend three. You have to amend three as well, right, or ten?
You could also do that.
I'm not sure that's improving financial.
So can I just add that the exclusion in IFRS 3 was included back in 2004 because there was a project on business combinations under common control, and the board decided that it would be better to consider these kind of transactions under that project to consider all the consequences. That's why, one of the reasons at least, that there is a scope exclusion in IFRS 3. Now, we know that acquisitions of associates will not be considered, at least in the considerable future. So by excluding these transactions from IS 28, it just creates uncertainty, more diversity, and we don't know when that will be addressed. When, for business combinations, at least we have a project that will address that. So that's kind of our concern, and we consider that in the paper, and that was our...
Is there not a project on IS 28?
Pipeline.
Currently done by
that's
the
also, pipeline.
That's also yeah, pipeline. Pipeline.
Nothing there's quite nothing. If you're waiting for that, you're going to be waiting like for Godot. You know.
So Andrew, you wanted to say something?
Yeah,
short and sweet.
I'm not sure it's going to be sweet. I'll try and keep it short. It was really just to go back to the start, where on the introduction there was a note that while this is what the guidance says, we know that there's considerable diversity in practice. So I'm not sure what Bertrand's suggesting would actually add to diversity in practice, because there already is substantial diversity in practice. The other thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is the same as John, that if this were to go as an agenda decision, then there's quite a lot of past history of transactions that people will have that they might suddenly discover they've got a problem with. And so I'm just a bit concerned about that.
Okay, so the easy question to ask first, give it a go, is whether the committee agrees with the staff recommendation to proceed with the tentative agenda decision that's in the appendix to paper 8, rather than undertaking standard setting activity. If I could have a show of hands.
One, two, three, four, six, seven.
And
Sandy?
Yeah, my hand is up.
Was John stand up?
I don't know, think so. He wanted to do more. That's eight. So that's enough.
Not that I'm trying to downplay it, I'm only I shouldn't after a vote engage in conversation, should I? I should let it go. I was only going to say, if it relates, just thinking about transition at all, I'd imagine that obviously we talked earlier quite a lot about impracticability, but two of the legs of impracticability that I imagine that at least where you can illustrate impracticability is obviously hindsight issues, where you possibly have to go back and either reassess judgments or estimates, thinking about, say, fair value estimates. So only to say, I perhaps in this scenario, if there was anything, these might be scenarios where it might be relatively easy in a sense to conclude that it may be impractical to go back and start to come up with fair values.
Do you want to open that up?
I shouldn't have said anything.
There'll be plenty of opportunity to discuss that later, I'm sure. Okay, Tony.
I'm not sure if we're going to come back and talk about the agenda decision, but if we do talk about the words themselves, I would be inclined to answer the question we've been asked and therefore not get into thoughts of whether there's a contribution or a distribution. I think the guidance in IAS 1 that says you need to consider whether there's a transaction with shareholders acting in the capacity of shareholders, that would apply across a range of circumstances, not just this particular transaction. So I'd be inclined to just answer the question that we've been asked.
I'm torn between trying to respond to Tony's comment and the point I was going to make originally. The point I was going to make originally, and this again goes to wording of the agenda decision, I certainly heard not only Andrew raise it originally, but several others pick up on that paragraph 26 of IS 28, and I think you might want to consider acknowledging that the committee considered whether that paragraph pointed you in a different direction. I think it's implicit in the agenda decision, but not explicit, and certainly it might not be helpful to get lots of people writing saying, but you forgot about X when it actually had been considered. And Tony, on your point, on the one hand, I know that that's one of the overarching points, you know, if there's transactions with shareholders and their capacity as shareholders, there are times when the committee does remind people of the existence of overarching requirements in IFRS, not that it's applicable only here, but says, don't forget that this is a situation when the disclosure requirement about, you know, disclosure of significant judgments or estimates or something else, you know, you might point to something as a reminder when it seems particularly relevant. So thinking about it, I don't know if your answer is any different if you think about it in that context.
No. I don't think I spent some time thinking about it. No, I just think that in this case I will be inclined to limit the agenda decision to what we were asked.
John?
Yeah, just on the point that Tony made, I mean, I actually thought it was helpful because one of the big concerns with these transactions is that if you apply IAS 28 and a cost model, you're just going to get gaming with structuring and pricing the transaction because it's under common control. To give you accounting outcomes that are nonsensical going forward. So I thought drawing attention to the fact that there may be a capital contribution involved in this transaction is actually very helpful because it's actually pointing people to accounting for the substance of this transaction and not just the acquisition at cost.
Okay, so could I maybe get a show of hands in addition to Tony, or I'll take his hands up. Who else thinks that we should remove the sentence that says, that points out the fact that the entity needs to assess whether the transaction includes a transaction with owners? Who else thinks that should be removed? Anybody? Okay, well, we'll keep it in the draft then.